This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. Scorching temperatures today in parts of the South. Marty Roush is with the National Weather Service.
Highs in Louisiana will be in the 90s, and then southern western Texas in particular with highs 100 to 110. And this is going to lead to max heat indices in the 110 to 120 range.
Climate change activists turned out in Boston to demonstrate, but this time it wasn't exactly a tea party.
Climate change protesters found a new way to share their ire against fossil fuels. They went to the Massachusetts State House during a debate on a proposed tax relief package, turned their backs to the Senate chamber, and dropped their pants. On their bare bottoms were the words, "Stop passing gas."
CBS's Allison Keyes says the protesters were arrested. President Biden is calling for the wealthiest to pay their fair share.
55 of the largest corporations in America paid zero in federal income tax on $40 billion in profit. Well, guess what? We need to get rid of some of these ridiculous special interest tax loopholes like the one for big oil.
The president speaking at a campaign rally in Philadelphia. Two people have been killed, three others injured after a shooting outside a concert in Washington State. Kyle Foreman is with the Grand County Sheriff's Office.
The shooter continued to shoot randomly into the crowd.
The suspect is under arrest. South Carolina ended its legislative session without passing a hate crimes bill. The bill was meant to honor those killed in the 2015 shooting at the Mother Emanuel AME Church. Blondell Gadsden, whose sister was killed, said making law is one thing.
The harder part is to have individuals who are supposed to carry out these laws and these bills to be diligent about doing what they are entrusted to do.
Remembering that 8-year-old girl who died in Texas Border Patrol custody after officials failed to intervene, Gerlene Joseph with the Haitian Bridge Alliance says the child literally died in her mother's arms.
She actually begged to please take care of my baby. And they refused.
The girl's mother informed agents her daughter had heart problems and sickle cell anemia. In Albany, a parade to celebrate Juneteenth. New York Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado attended.
We have a lot of work left to do, and I think we should be inspired by the progress we've made, but certainly not satisfied.
Juneteenth commemorates the end of slavery in the U.S. In Houston, some disappointment with lawmakers on this Pride Month.
This is a really bad legislative session for our community.
Kennedy Lofton is an advocate for the LGBTQ community. This is CBS News.
Need hires who dazzle without the hassle? You need Indeed. Their powerful platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The American Heart Association is reminding people that hot summer weather can put extra stress on your heart and increase the risk of death. Deborah Van Fleet reports.
Dr. Peter Panagis at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis says the increased risk is most notable for people with cardiovascular disease.
And that would be ischemic heart disease due to narrowing of the arteries, stroke, heart failure, or arrhythmias or abnormal heart rate.
Panagis says simple steps can help prevent heat-related illness. Avoid being outdoors during the hottest time of the day, between noon and 3 p.m. Wear lightweight, light-colored clothing, a hat, and sunglasses. Stay hydrated and apply sunscreen frequently. He recommends taking breaks from the sun and cooling down with fluids and water if experiencing lightheadedness, cramps, or other symptoms of overheating. He adds, never leave children or pets in a parked car on hot days. The human body is well adapted for temperature regulation in hot conditions, Panagis says, but less so in infants, young children, and adults over 65. And he notes some widely used medications can interfere with this regulatory process.
Especially individuals with heart disease, high blood pressure, who take certain medications which are very common, such as medications for depression, insomnia, or the inability to sleep, or for general conditions of poor circulation.
Heat-related illnesses exist on a spectrum, from sunburn and heat cramps to heat exhaustion and, worst of all, heat stroke.
And that's a sudden and progressively increased high body temperature, hot, red, or dry, damp skin, very fast, strong pulse, headache, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, and most importantly, passing out or loss of consciousness.
He He cautions that heat stroke, while rare, is very serious and can be fatal. I'm Deborah Van Fleet.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Chingris Thompson & Watts, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Chingris Thompson & Watts today, 855-954-1186.
All in to win, Chingris Thompson & Watts, GTWLawyers.com.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
93.5, The Tap. 93.5, The Tap.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Welcome to this second hour, this special broadcast of Morning Cannolis. My name is Jim Santel, coming to you from the studios of WAUK Radio here in Waukesha, broadcasting throughout the state of Wisconsin on the broadcast studios of Civic Media. Thank you for once again joining me as we're talking this morning about this major event in American history, the return of a federal grand jury indictment against the former president. His name is Donald John Trump. Right before the break, taking some callers. We're going to take more of those callers in this hour. Right before the break, chatting with one of those callers, Bill, who was asking the question, how do you pick a jury? How do you pick a jury? Well, again, as at some point down the road, probably not this calendar year, arguably not even next year, there will be a jury impaneled, again, a public proceeding in the federal district court there in South Florida. Bill's question, very good one, which is, how do you pick a jury that's impartial? And again, in a circumstance like this, you're not going to ask jurors. You may ask them what they know about Donald Trump, what they know about the case, but you're not going to require that they have no knowledge whatsoever of the events in this case. That's a question that, frankly, if you have somebody on the jury pool, the so-called veneer, who says to you, I know nothing about Donald Trump, I know nothing about the particular facts and circumstances, can make the argument either as prosecutor or defense attorney, you may not even want those folks on the jury just because they're so completely disconnected to what's going on. You want people who plainly are able to put aside what they know, the things that they may have thought about, the exposure they may have had to this. And again, you don't want someone who's necessarily steeped in the weeds of this, but who probably has some exposure to it. The question, however, the focus you want to pursue is, can they put those things that they have seen and they've heard, and even some of the conclusions to which they have come, to one side and make a determination on what? Exclusively based upon what they see in the courtroom. Putting aside the media reports, putting aside this broadcast, for example, and saying, I'm going to put the government to its proof. Government is obliged to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that all these things happened, these 38 counts in the indictment, this stories about a movement of the documents around, the involvement of these employees, the involvement of the attorney, which we're going to get to as well this hour, discussions of the security issues implicated by these documents, which we've talked about at some length, issues of intent. What did the president know? What did he understand? How did he appreciate the seriousness of these documents? An awful lot of evidence inside the indictment to support that. All of that inside the courtroom during the course of the trial before the trial jury, before the Pettit jury, as it's sometimes called. And the question you ask of them is, can they intellectually, can they academically look at that and make a determination based, obviously, not upon a completely blank slate in their own minds, but upon the things that they see exclusively? And can they do that academic thing? During the course of my 30 years as a prosecutor, a civil litigator as well, I often was very, very impressed by the capacity of jurors, even though they may have heard something about the case, may know something about the trappings of it. They can often put that to one side. So will it take a long time? Absolutely. Will it take a long time to find those probably 15, 16, 17, 18 jurors? You've got enough people in case some of them drop out. Will it take a long time to find them? Jury selection itself would probably take several weeks. Perhaps not months, but weeks. The prosecution's already said that their case in chief is going to take at least 4, maybe 5, 6 weeks or so. Jury selection, no small thing. You want to make certain that that process is legitimate as well. And so all of that, again, going to what will happen down the road. Let's talk a little bit more about things in this indictment in particular, and in specifically going back to this issue of intent and knowledge. Two major events described in this indictment initially and then later on in the context, the text of the indictment. July of 2021, the president is, again, obviously he's no longer the president at that time, but he gives an interview at the Bedminster Club. This is in New Jersey. He gives this interview to a writer and a publisher in connection with a forthcoming book. Two members of the former president's staff are also there, again, according to the indictment. And all this recorded with his knowledge and consent. And again, here's where we get the president's actual words, things we have not seen a lot in other settings. And again, some of this has already been in the media, produced for public consumption. And at the time of Trump's term as president, a senior military official purportedly had feared that the president might order an attack on what's described in the indictment as Country A. And that senior military official advised Trump against doing so. Again, all that is a predicate to this interview being given in July of 2021 at the Bedminster Club. Upon greeting the writer, the publisher, two staff members, Trump stated, "Look what I found." This was this senior military officer's plan of attack. Read it and just show. It's interesting. He says, "Well, with the senior military official, let me see that. I'll show you an example. He said that I wanted to attack Country A. Isn't that amazing?" He says, "I have a big pile of papers. This thing just came up. Look, this was him. They presented me this. This is off the record, but they presented me this. This was him. This was the Defense Department and him." And the writer says, "Wow. We looked at some. This was him. This wasn't done by me. This was him. All sorts of stuff. Pages long. Look. Wait a minute. Let's see here," Trump goes on to say. He says, I just found. Isn't that amazing? This totally wins my case, you know." He says, "Except it is like highly confidential." And the staffer apparently laughs. And here is the president saying, "Secret. This is secret information. Look," he says, "look at this. You attack and there's more conversation." Trump goes on to say, "By the way, isn't this incredible? I was just thinking because we were talking about it. And, you know, he said he," meaning the president now, "he wanted to attack Country A and what?" Again, a lot of this sort of divided up in the course of the conversation. But all of it indicating that the president not only knew about the secret nature of this information, but banding about with a certain amount of pride and bravado here. Trump goes on to say, "This was done by the military and given to me. I think we can probably write." Probably about disclosure of this. The staffer says, "I don't know. We'll have to see. Yeah, we'll have to." And the president says, "Declassify it. See, as president, I could have declassified it. Now I can't, you know, but this is still a secret." And the president finally says, "Isn't that interesting?" One of the two major conversations recounted during the course of this indictment here, during the course of the establishment in the indictment of the charge that focuses on intent in particular. And so in addition to that major event, another one that also happens, again, described in this indictment with great detail. August or September of 2021, no longer president once again. The former president met in the office again, the Bedminster Club, with a representative of his political action committee, a PAC, as they say. And during that meeting, Trump commented that an ongoing military operation in Country B was not going well, talking about what's going on in this foreign country. Trump showed that PAC representative a classified map of country B, a classified map of the country, told that PAC representative that he should not be showing the map to him and not to get too close. Now, what does that go to? That goes to intent. He knows what he's got in his hand. He knows that that is a private document. It's a classified document, plainly compromising the military posture over there. PAC representative did not have a security clearance, according to the indictment, and or did he have any need to know classified information about those military operations. Two major conversations that take place, again, during the course of the president's review of handling of these documents, all of them indicating that the president once again had this specific intent not only to keep them, he knew that they were private, and presenting them, not just keeping them in boxes, sloppily maintained once again in the ballroom, in the bathroom, a chandeliered bathroom at Mar-a-Lago, but being discussed with other people who have no business seeing this information. That's the nature of the allegations in this complaint. Significantly, once again, underscoring the president's appreciation of the wrongness, the incapacity that he legally has to offer this information up, to have the documents in the first place, an allegation in the indictment that on February 16th of 2017, 4 years before the former president's disclosure of this information, the president said this once again at a press conference. He said, "The first thing I thought of when I heard about it," and he's talking about some disclosure out there, "how does the press get this information that's classified?" Again, he's bemoaning the fact that the media has gotten information that he doesn't want them to have. "How do they do it? You know why? Because it's an illegal process," he says, "and the press should be ashamed of themselves. But more importantly, the people that gave out the information to the press should be ashamed of themselves, really ashamed." Again, that many years before the accounts of his disclosure of similar kinds of information in the public domain to these public settings where he's having conversations with people, again, who should not be exposed at all to this information. What does that go to, and why does that in this grand jury indictment? It establishes the president's knowledge, his intent, his purpose, and his understanding that the documents that he has, he should not have, and certainly should not be using them in the way that he is using them. All of that speaks volumes in this indictment, again, about the intent. And also, as these particular conversations indicate, these two that Jack Smith has pulled out, I'm sure, from many other conversations, highlighting the fact that these materials go to what? National security, maps of other countries, materials involving military operations that are not a part of the public domain. And what is the consequence of those? Well, it's not explicitly stated, but it is entirely possible that during the course of the trial, we'll hear some of this. What is the impact of this? We don't know for sure. But the impact of the disclosure of that kind of confidential private information destroys our military status, destroys our national security overseas, affects people overseas who are protecting us. There are sources, there are spies, those kinds of people arguably compromised by this. And once again, this reference early on in the indictment to the hundreds of people that come through Mar-a-Lago who arguably had access to this, where in the ballroom, in the storage room, in the bathroom. We don't know that for sure. But again, the inappropriate retention and maintenance of these documents. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about other allegations here, the movement of these documents around. And yes, we're also going to talk about the involvement of the attorney and the specific attempt by this former president to obstruct justice, as also alleged in this indictment against him. Stay with us for that further conversation. Did I lose the other?
With one call, the Civic Media Network of stations can deliver your business's message to the entire state of Wisconsin.
Or your hometown.
Marketing plans that work for your business. One call can do it all. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now,
and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
And we are back. We're talking this morning about this indictment against the former President Donald John Trump. Going into some detail, reading some accounts of it because it is so very compelling. And again, allegations, hasten to add that these are just that. They're allegations. They're not proof. But certainly the specificity of what's called this talking indictment, this speaking indictment, is something that is accessible. And hearing that out loud, hearing the president's own words out loud, things that he said on tape. We're also going to talk about some of the conversations, the texts back and forth between him and some of his employees, in which the employees, employee one, employee two, not identified by name, but plainly in his employ at the time, he's exchanging messages about where these documents are moving, the boxes, their attempts to get them into the right spot, according to where the president wants them, those kinds of things. Movement at Mar-a-Lago, again, by the president under his direction, lots and lots of references. Some of them admittedly fairly cryptic in the text of the indictment, but worth reading as well. And along the way, the president also saying some incredibly incriminating things about those boxes in May of 2022. Again, this is when he's beginning to meet with his attorneys about this. This is after the Department of Justice has issued a subpoena, after the requests have been made for the production of these, of all of these documents. Please return them to us, Mr. President. Again, before the search warrant in August. And along the way, as the attorneys are trying to attempt to make the former president responsive to these requests, understanding almost certainly that he's got an obligation to turn them back, and appreciating that if he does, he probably will evade, will get out from under any charges. Donald Trump, during the course of various conversations, says, "I don't want anybody looking. I don't want anybody looking through my boxes," he says. "I really don't. I don't want you looking through my boxes." That's what he's telling his own attorney. He says, "Well, what happens if we just don't respond at all to these requests from the Department of Justice, from NARA, and don't play ball with them?" He knows what's going on. He knows the requests. He goes on to say, "Wouldn't it be better if we just told them we don't have anything here?" And all of this, once again, in the wake of all of these conversations, the movement around of these boxes, the employee engagement in putting them in the storage area, in a temporary storage area, in the bathroom, in the ballroom, moving around and, again, showing them to various people. Finally, he says, "Well, look, isn't it better if there are no documents?" Again, he's saying that to his attorney and obviously encouraging the attorney to do what? To engage in the very fraud that he then prompts by virtue of making misrepresentations. We'll get back to that in just a moment or so. Why is all of that? Again, those are the words of the former president. Those are not representations by other people. Those are things that what? Confirm his knowledge, his intent, his understanding of the fact that he shouldn't have these. And now this goes to the second portion, which is the obstruction piece. He knows he's got this request pending. He knows he's obliged to respond through his attorneys. And his engagement is, what can we do not to comply? What can we do to stop responding? That is what we have long called the crime fraud exception to the attorney-client privilege. That's why we've got it here, right? Because in this case, again, pretty much one-sided, the attorney, his name, by the way, is E. Evan Corcoran. We'll get back to him in just a moment or so. Plainly horrified by all this, he's plainly cooperating now with the government and all this, but being told by the president, what can we do to stonewall? What can we do to not respond, to tell them we don't have documents, that these are my boxes and I'm not going to give them up? All of that in support of what? Obstruction. And that is also a part of this indictment. We've got a number of phone callers again on the line calling in to talk about all these things with questions and comments. Let's talk to some of those callers right now. Mark, you're on the line, been waiting for a while. Appreciate your calling in this morning, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. And there's a 37 or 38 charges that I hear from in the civic media. It's 38 and a lot of the media is just reporting 37.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead. Right.
What gets me, there's clear evidence now that Donald Trump took these documents, and they're not his documents. They belong to the people of the United States of
That's right.
America. They're not Donald Trump's documents. And the fact that he's bandying this information about saying, well, I want to do this, I want to do this. Let's just say we don't have this stuff. And I don't know that, I think I've heard that we still haven't recovered everything that he probably stole, you know, so we don't know who got access to this information. That and the fact that there's evidence that he's talking about the attack on another country and all this.
Right.
Well, if you have any knowledge at all, you know that that's the kind of thing that our military does, is that they look for any possible contingencies. What do we need to do if we need to respond to something like this? But you don't go out there and blab it out there in public. I mean, because Donald Trump has been cavalier about confidential information since he went into office. I mean, one of the first meetings with the Sergeys, I think that
right with the Russians in the Oval Office, right? He's disclosing information provided, right? Right.
He disclosed information about an intelligence asset that we had removed that intelligence asset because Trump exposed him.
Right.
I mean, it is just the man has. I can't say that he's completely ignorant because he apparently was actively engaged in the act of obstruction,
planning out
how to obstruct, and yet he is still obstructing because have we gotten everything back yet?
Right, and so Mark, I'm going to seize on that too. Of course, in order to search someplace, we've got to have probable cause to believe, but I'm sure that's one of the questions that's still on the open file list of the special counsel's office there to figure out what is still out there. And again, can't go into search any place in America absent probable cause to believe that you will find there some location. But given the way in which these documents were bandied about at Bedminster and in plainly and Mar-a-Lago in particular, I think your question, your observation about the cavalier treatment of them and the fact that we may not still have everything is hugely significant as we go forward here. Plainly, these are allegations in a complaint, and we'll see what at trial. Doesn't mean that the prosecution is limited to just this information. Could, in fact, produce more information about things discovered in between now and the time of trial. Nothing preventing that at all. Stay with us. We're going to take some more callers right after the break and then continue our discussion about other aspects of this indictment. We're not done here in Morning Cannolis. More in the content of this indictment. More discussion coming up this morning.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
CBS News Brief. The heat is on the rise in parts of Texas. The Weather Channel meteorologist Paul Goodlow.
We're really going to start turning back on the broiler here, heating up the skies, temperatures at or above 100. When places like Houston get above 100 degrees in June, you know it is crazy hot.
Two people are dead and three others hurt after a shooting at an amphitheater in Grant County, Washington. The gunman is among the injured. Sheriff's Office Public Information Officer Kyle Foreman.
We don't know what the motives were, what the intentions were of the shooter.
Tomorrow is Juneteenth. The first black female president of a Boston area college, Aisha Francis, was honored at a city celebration.
I'm a native of Nashville, Tennessee, and did not learn about Juneteenth until I was in college from Texans. And so to really live through a period when our nation is embracing Juneteenth, it's a really special.
CBS News Brief, I'm Wendy Gillette.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation. The law firm of Gingras Thompson & Wachs has a track record of making life-changing positive differences for their clients. $5.25 million to a woman who suffered brain injuries and her husband passed away when struck by a drunk driver. $1 million to three different individuals injured by drunk drivers. $1 million settlement to a man injured in a motorcycle accident. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs, 855-954-1186. 954-1186. Hello, Chippewa Valley and 93.5 The Tap listeners. Civic Media is thrilled to be your new neighbor. And to celebrate our arrival, we have an exclusive offer just for you and your local business. Be one of the first 10 callers right now, and you'll receive 1 month of free advertising. That's right, 1 month of free advertising. This incredible offer ends June 30th. Boost your business and secure your free month of advertising right now. Call 608-949-8989. 608-949-8989. Call now. The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olson has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Are reviewing this morning on Morning Cannolis the text, a deep dive into the indictment returned by the federal grand jury in South Florida against the former president Donald Trump. Chatted before about the involvement not only of his employees in moving these documents around, texts back and forth between them and between the president about where their movement is going to take place, and also this very important aspect of the president's own attorney. His name we know is E. Evan Corcoran. He's identified as attorney one in the text of the indictment itself. Fascinating discussion between them. Again, in the wake of lots of movements of these boxes back and forth, again, an attempt by the president, almost certainly, as the indictment reads, to avoid disclosure to his own attorney of the documents that were there. Lots and lots of discussion between them. And on May 23rd, Trump confirmed his understanding with that attorney, Corcoran, that the attorney would return to the Mar-a-Lago Club to search for any documents. Again, all this in an attempt to try to comply with the requests, the subpoenas of the Department of Justice related to these classified and other documents. And when the attorney returned to review the documents, the president, of course, has some conversation with him. Between May 23rd, a meeting at that time, and June 2nd, when Donald Trump and the attorney returned to that Mar-a-Lago location, between that period of time, the co-defendant, Nauta, removed at Trump's direction a total of about 64 boxes from the storage room and brought them to Trump's residence. And between May 24th, between 5:30 and 5:38, removed three of the boxes from the storage room. May 30th, again, between 9:08 and some other time right after that, there's a discussion about that between the two of them. And then some texts between Trump and Nauta, his co-defendant, about where those boxes went, in particular discussions about their locations inside Mar-a-Lago. The Trump attorney, again, is engaging with the president, says, "Mr. President, I'm coming back to, again, look at the documents, to take the inventory that we need to take at the time." Undeniably, the upshot of all of this is that knowing that his own attorney, E. Evan Corcoran, is going to be present there to do this inventory, presumably to make this disclosure, what does the president do? The former president, he engages his staff. They move the documents around so that when the attorney shows up, those documents are not there. And again, the attorney required to provide a full accounting to the Department of Justice. And again, this is one of the false certifications made. The upshot of all this between May 23rd of 2022, just last year, and June 2nd, before the Trump attorney Corcoran could be there to do this assessment, to review all these documents, the co-defendant, Nauta, at Trump's direction, at his bidding, moved about 64 boxes from the storage room to the residence and brought to the storage room about 30 of those in particular. Neither Trump nor Nauta ever informed the attorney of that information. The attempt, again, to try to keep these very documents from his own counsel. And that, of course, leads again to the false certifications that are made by the attorney, premised upon the misrepresentations made to him by his own client, the client's name, Donald Trump. All that set forth, again, in great detail in this indictment. All of that happening, of course, before the search warrant itself, based upon that deception by the president and his co-defendant here. The attorney provides information indicating the diligent search was conducted, the boxes. The search was conducted after receipt of the subpoena in order to locate those documents. And any and all responsive documents accompany this certification by the attorney. We've complied. I've looked at everything. It is all there. Those statements, according to the indictment, of course, were false because, among other reasons, Trump had directed the movement of those boxes away from his attorney so that he could not see them. And, of course, all of that a part of the principal indictment against the president and his co-defendant, Nauta, in the attempt to undermine not only justice, but to obstruct the justice process itself. We've got other folks on the line. Mary, you've been waiting for a long time. Appreciate your calling in as well this morning from Wauwatosa. Glad to have you with us, Mary.
Good morning, Jim. First time caller here, and I've heard you speak from your expertise in the community. Regarding the concerning potential threats to our country's security, this asks any knowledge you might have regarding our government's response and action to these threats. There are probably many people questioning this.
Sure. Very good. Mary, outstanding question. So I will tell you what my reference points are. My reference points are as a former U.S. attorney here under the Obama administration and assistant U.S. attorney before that, in which context I did have exposure to some classified information. But even more significantly, I spent about 2 years in Iraq, and I was the justice attaché there and the rule of law coordinator there, working with the State Department, working with the Defense Department. I was not there a part of the military, working to try to establish the rule of law with judges and police officers, lots of training, corrections officers, those kinds of things. As you can well imagine, Mary, a huge amount of information crossing my desk on a regular basis that is classified. Not all of it related to specific troop movements there, but an awful lot of information that, if getting into the wrong hands, would undeniably compromised not only our present situation at that time, but potentially down the road as well. Our relationship with the emerging government of Iraq at that time. Certainly our relationships with other countries on the face of the planet, coalition partners at the time, engaging in the war there at the time, 2006 to 2008, significantly affecting the ability of our military out there to do its job to try to restore some peace. It was a war by any measure of anyone's measure at the time. And the exposure that I had to that time underscored for me, as nothing else has done in my career, the significance of classified information held very, very tightly there. And on a regular basis, the security forces there, both military and civilian, would search at night our offices to make certain that we had not in any way mishandled these kinds of documents, properly handled all the time, not only because of the content of what they said and ensuring that they did not get into the wrong hands or the wrong places, but because even through inadvertence, that might happen. And again, the other thing that I was impressed with was the notion that I don't know, even in this moment, how significant this particular piece of information might have for somebody else under some other circumstances, the impact that that could have, not only for those of us at the embassy, certainly inside the green zone, for the emerging nation of Iraq, political figures there, its government figures, all those kinds of things. Our government relations around the world, all of those things are huge. Many of the things at the time from my own position were somewhat speculative. I could not say for certain, but undeniably, the nature of those kinds of things to which I was exposed underscored for me, and I see again in this indictment reverberations of exactly that. When an individual, namely the former president, is talking about things, maps of countries, military operations, precisely the kinds of things that you do not want into the public domain. And Mary, your question is especially important because of the trial, which we've talked about as well. My anticipation is that Jack Smith, when this case is presented to a jury, will also need to explain to them that this is not simply a matter of mishandling documents or even of bandying them about, as horrific as those events are, but also talking about the consequences of doing that. And so, Mary, your question goes to that. Why, as we always ask here on this radio station, why is this important? Jack Smith will ask the same thing and will answer that question during the course of the trial, almost certainly with that answer, because it compromises our national security, potentially places in jeopardy the lives of people who are protecting us overseas, not only in official capacities, but also as our spies overseas, all those kinds of things, hugely compromised. And so, again, those kinds of things speak volumes from this indictment. I see reverberations in my own history. And so, Mary, thank you so much for the comment, the question, the observation. And we also have a caller from Merrimack. Jack, you've been waiting on the line as a long time. Let's take your call as well.
Thank you. I have no problem with Jack Smith prosecuting Trump or something other than the January 6th two attempted coups. But I'm wondering, the entire Republican establishment at this point is entirely ignoring the fact that there were both violent and political coups attempted against America. This is the more serious thing. And they apparently have absolutely no interest in investigating any of this stuff. If you listened, and I'm sure you did, listen to any of the January 6th Commission public hearings, it's very clear that Trump conspired with a bunch of other upper-level Republicans, including people like Ron Johnson, who is now serving as our senator, to attempt to overthrow the government of the United States by reversing the process of an election. And nothing is going to be done about this to any of these people?
And Jack,
I find that pretty outrageous.
All right. It certainly is outrageous if nothing is done. The full expectation is that something will be done. And again, this indictment that released just this past week, admittedly, you're very, very right about this, focusing on the Mar-a-Lago documents matter. Jack Smith has a lot on his plate, and that's not an excuse to get these things done. But the other portion of his plate is exactly what you just described, which is this huge involvement on January 6th. 6th, attempt to overmine not only the counting of the electoral votes, but also to undermine and overthrow the government on that day. He is also investigating that. And I agree with you that as significant as this matter is because of the reasons we've described this morning, January 6th would probably be at the top of the list, even greater, arguably greater than that, because of the threat that it also posed to the safety and security of our nation, the vitality of our nation going forward, the future of our nation. And my full expectation, based upon things that we've seen, admittedly, we don't know everything in the grand jury in Washington, D.C. Again, a discrete grand jury, different component of the investigation of the former president. Is it sometime this year, maybe this summer yet? Jack Smith, we'll hear from him again. A grand jury there will return a second indictment, also naming the former president, probably also naming other people involved also in a conspiracy of the sort, Jack, that you're identifying here with respect to January 6th. That is yet to come. And I probably will offer the same sort of perspective on that, which is not only the specific events that happened, the things alleged in the indictment, but the reasons why those things are so important. And also the reasons more generally, Jack, if I can extend your thought in more broadly, and that is into the notion that this is all about the rule of law, right? Even if we did not have these considerable threats to our national security identified in this indictment, this is also about violating the fundamental rules and regulations and, yes, criminal statutes of our nation that require that we do, in fact, handle classified documents and other materials properly. We need to enforce those laws for everybody. As Jack Smith said, the law applies to everybody in the state, in the United States of America generally. This is also about that issue, the rule of law. No one is above the law, including the former president. And so all those issues are very important. And Jack, I'll encourage you to call back in at some point down the road to chat more about that other portion of this, almost certainly going to be the subject of another grand jury indictment sometime later this year. We also have another caller on the line. John, you've been waiting for a while as well. Let's take your call, John, and your observation or comment this morning.
Hi, Jim. Great show this morning.
Thanks so much.
Great show by your producer, Anastasia, today.
I think a lot of her as well.
I have a question about the indictment. Is there any hint at all to what Trump ultimately intended to do with these documents that he withheld? Was he just, holding on to them for ego or, showing them to other people to show what a great man he was, or, is there any indication that he wanted to maybe financially benefit from them somehow?
All right. Right.
And how important is that, in your expert opinion, to the prosecution of this case? Is that a question that needs to be answered, or is it just enough to show that he improperly withheld them?
Right, John, a great not only law school question, but also a great focus on this. Let me answer the first portion of that, and I may take the second portion after the break here. The second portion is that sort of a purposeful vision for what he was going to do with these documents isn't necessary for the prosecution. The allegations of simply having them, using them, banning them about, that is enough. But I believe very strongly, and John, I'm going to talk more about this right after our break, in response to your good question, that Jack Smith will do a lot of presentation about not only the intent here, but also the reason why Donald Trump is doing this. We're going to talk more about that and take more of your thought, John, right after this break.
To see you again.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
Apple pie, fireworks, parades, red, white, and blue. Civic Media loves 4th of July, and we hope you do too. Would your business benefit from reaching hundreds of thousands of radio listeners? Show your American pride by helping sponsor radio promos, celebrating Independence Day, listing safe fireworks displays, and honoring military veterans. If your business would like to be involved, email your name and phone number to info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
And we are back in this final segment of Morning Cannolis. And right before the break, I was talking with John, and John asking this very important question about what other things might the indictment say about the purpose, the reason that Donald Trump was doing all of this. And we certainly have hints of that. Plainly, some of this may just be some pride here, some bravura that is in these comments, these conversations with various folks at Bedminster, sort of saying, look what I've got. Look at this. I shouldn't have this. Should look at this, but don't come too close. Just this sort of arrogant notion that I've got these things and they're in my possession. And perhaps once again, I'm a person of importance. That's my interpretation of this, and I've got them still. That in enough is enough to support not only intent, as are all of these other indicators. That is enough to secure a conviction, if you will. All these attempts also not only to keep the documents, but as we'll indicate in just a moment or so, obstruct the administration of justice, obstruct the Department of Justice. John, my sense is that at the trial, we may well get, as this is developed further, a bit more exposition from the special counsel about what else motivated the former president. No indication in the grand jury indictment itself that this was prompted by finances, no specific reference to money, but my full expectation is that the grand jury, again, through subpoenas and other materials, other things administered, again, through the special counsel's auspices, has also followed the money on this and has taken a look at financial documents to see if there was any aspect of that. That's also a very important portion. And even if to date that hasn't been disclosed, it doesn't mean it can't be presented. If there is something there to disclose, there may be other people coming forward. Again, an indictment, even though this is very, very specific, it is a talking indictment. It tells you an awful lot about it. And yes, consistent with Jack Smith's encouragement, I too would encourage everybody to read through the first half of it anyway. It is a fairly quick and very compelling read. Again, allegations, not confirmation of exactly the conviction here, but nonetheless a compelling read, easy to do. All of that to be fleshed out even more during the course of the trial coming up, presumably sometime in the next year, maybe even beyond that in the district court. Got another caller calling in also. Wiley. Wiley, you're on the phone this morning. We appreciate your being a part of our conversation.
And I tell you what, I'm jacked. I am so excited about your expansion here and the promotion. I'm a guy that's been in southeastern Wisconsin for about 55 years, spent 40-plus years in law enforcement at high levels in the private sector with the lawyers, so on and so forth. As I watch this, though, everyone made fun of a lot of everybody else when they used the word woke. And if there ever was a time somebody should be woke in this country, it is now. And I'm looking at this, and I'll warn you right up front, I'm a conspiracy theorist.
Okay.
And I'll tell you this.
Conspiracies do happen, Wiley. I mean, the reality is there are conspiracies is charged in this indictment. And frankly, you know, as a prosecutor, I charge conspiracies all the time. What are they? As you well know, being in law enforcement, and thank you for that service. 40 years, you know what is a conspiracy. It is agreement between parties, and the purpose behind it is an illegal end, right? They happen all the time. And as long as they're based upon evidence and facts, nothing wrong with alleging conspiracies and proving them in court. But in any event, I interrupted you. Go right ahead, Wiley, and tell me more about your thoughts here.
Excellent. So with this situation, I'm concerned that the suppression of news. Now, there's rumor running around in southeastern Wisconsin, at least through a large cellular company, that there's been malfunctions through a large cell company. I won't mention it, but it's causing great difficulties on a lot of ends. Now, I'm not here to adjust and try to look at what your programming equipment is and so on and so forth. I'm happy you're there, and I want you guys to stay there. I want you to stay on this beat.
And we'll do just that. Yep. Go ahead.
And I'll say this, okay? You may or may not believe this, but they're back in 2000, when things were getting hot and people were coming into Racine County that were interested in development, so on and so forth. There was a former radio station, and it was a large, it was a 100-watt station, I believe it was, a WRKR. And mysteriously, after it was purchased, WRKR, in Mount Pleasant, Hispanic programming began. And that didn't sit well with a lot of people. And ultimately speaking, without further ado, is that particular station was harassed and forced into a sheriff's sale. And as a result of knocking not one tower down, but two towers, literally cutting towers down so they could no longer air the message. I'm worried that these guys are so desperate. And I'm talking southeastern Wisconsin and beyond. Excuse me there, guys. Sorry about that. Dog. And so it sounds weird, but I know about this situation, and it's been talked about. It's been read about. It's been ignored, and a lot of cover-up of that RKR debacle.
And why
a lot of people suffered.
Right. Sure. And appreciate the account. I cannot add to the facts or the circumstances of that at all. What I will say is this, and again, I appreciate the comment. I will tell you as we begin to wrap up here, you know, you're talking about this today. I'm so proud to be a part of an organization. My bosses, so to speak, Sage and Mike, have told me to speak the truth and to talk about the facts, as we always say. What are the facts of cases? Again, to offer my observations based upon my experience and that of others, certainly, about why they're important and what we should do about all those kinds of things. Your comment, of even more broadly than what may or may not have happened in Racine there, goes to this fundamental notion about public exposition, right? About ensuring that we have airways, radio stations like this one, that do afford you and other people, and me as well, as long as I remain on the airwaves here, and as long as my bosses are supportive of these kinds of discussions, important to the future of the Republic, right? It's all about the First Amendment stuff. I don't need to tell you that at all. Important for people to understand what the facts are. And I have every confidence. I have every confidence in Sage, who's, along with Mike, is responsible for these broadcasts and many other things going on here at Civic Media throughout the state of Wisconsin. I've gotten tremendous support, not only from them, but also from callers, both on the air and off the air, supporting the notion that good and thoughtful discussion, we can disagree about things. We can even disagree sometimes about the facts. We can discern what those are and dig deeper to get those facts just right. This is what it's all about. And any time, as you indicated, Wiley, that is stopped in any way, that it is stymied, that is a movement closer toward the demise of our nation and the destruction of what we think about as the First Amendment. So appreciate the comment entirely. Appreciate today this very in-depth examination of the indictment against former President Donald Trump. We're going to talk more about it certainly next week as well. I will promise next week also to get to the United States Supreme Court, which we did not get to, some other other major things coming out of that important high tribunal, having to do with voting rights and also having to do with the future of Medicaid and Medicare in our nation. We'll talk more about that in our next broadcast. But for now, thank you all for listening in today. It is an important time in America, an important time to be thoughtful, important time to be digesting the important facts as we go ahead. Listen every Saturday morning to our discussion and have a good week, everybody. Take care. It's the
late night sound. Hello, Chippewa Valley and 93.5 The Tap listeners. Civic Media is thrilled to be your new neighbor. And to celebrate our arrival, we have an exclusive offer just for you and your local business. Be one of the first 10 callers right now, and you'll receive 1 month of free advertising. That's right, 1 month of free advertising.
This incredible offer ends June 30th.
Boost your business and secure your free month of advertising right now. Call 608-949-8989. 608-949-8989. Call now. When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Walks, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Walks today, 855-954-1186. All in two ways, Gingras Thompson & Walks, GTW.